Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Couch Confidentials, episode number 12. And today I have Odd Morten Sørensen with me. He is a marketing operations consultant at Playmops in Norway. And like always, I'm your host, Matthew Niederberger. And yeah, today's going to be an informal chat about MarTech and what our opinions are, what are our experiences in getting more value out of it for businesses themselves. But before we get started, Odd, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the show with you.
Yeah, and we spoke a few weeks ago, and it's the most amazing conversation that I've had in a long time.
Yeah.
And apparently we have a shared history, but we didn't know it before, did we?
No. It was a really surprise. We found out how small the world really can be.
And apparently we are we both spent some time in the Navy, not the same ones. I was in the Dutch Navy at the time, and you were in the Norwegian Navy, as I remember correctly. And I think the question or the how we discovered this is that I asked you, how do you pronounce your first name? I mean, an average American would look at it, or Englishman would look at it and say Odd, but it's Odd.
Yeah.
And the full first name is actually Odd Morten, I believe.
That's correct.
Yeah. So there was this friend I had in the Norwegian Navy called Odie. So I was like, do I need to pronounce your name as Odie? And that started to ring a bell with you. And I think I saw it in your face when I mentioned it. And then I also mentioned that he was on the Norwegian Navy ship Trondheim.
Yeah.
And I think that's when all the puzzle pieces fell in place, right?
Yeah, because, you know, having spent time in the Norwegian Navy, and there was just one Odie. His full name was, full real first name was Oddbjørn.
That's it.
Of course, like me, when we go abroad, it's easier to say Odie for his name though. So when you said Odie, I'm like, my God, has to be. So I found this picture, and you're like, oh yeah, that's the guy.
That's him.
So it was. That was really, really something.
The smile on the face, so unmistakable. It's, I think he was born a real seaman. He belonged to the oceans, and when you saw him in his uniform, he was always very impressive and always friendly. Always a smile on his face. He had I call it kind of the traditional sailor's beard, going looking like a true Norwegian man. But unfortunately, you did have to tell me some bad news. He did pass away in 2007.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it was a strange way. But again, like I mentioned a lot of times on LinkedIn, it's it can be a nice platform. And I'm glad our paths crossed in this way, and that we have kind of a shared history being old military veterans, so to speak. Yeah. as we were talking before we started the recording, this is going to be the segue into MarTech. We're like, how do we move from a kind of a military introduction to MarTech? And the topic that we wanted to discuss today actually is an acronym that has a lot of similarities with that in the military. SOP, which in military means standard operating procedures, but in our case, and we add a little P at the end, it's strategy, organization, process, and people. What made you want to kind of come up with this acronym and dive into this today?
Well, actually, I can't take the credit for that acronym. It's just based on like the best rule of thumb when you're buying software, like when you're buying new tools. It's like for many years now, you've heard many people say, don't buy the new shiny tools, you have to align it with the strategy, the organization. You have to have the processes in place. You have to have the people. Then you can buy the tools, and then you have to do the training, right?
Training.
In order to get your ROI on the tools that you buy. So, it's just based out of that. And it's not me that came up with that, but it's a really good kind of a starting point for anybody thinking of getting any new tech to your business.
Yeah, so it differs a little from what I've been working with as an acronym. Sounds more like PowerPoint, people, processes, and technology, PPT.
Thank you.
I was just thinking about it. It was odd, all these little acronyms. But it really comes down to strategy and organization. But I, you know, coming to look at it right now and all the discussions that I've had in previous podcasts with other people, strategy and organization seem to me at the moment the real bottlenecks. I mean, we can put processes in place, we can train our people, and I think we can almost scrap technology. Technology has already proven itself to be, when implemented correctly, when people are trained correctly in how to use it, the technology can deliver. But a lot of bottlenecks that we're seeing in proper deployments of marketing technology is still around having a solid strategy. What problem are we going to solve with this? And how do we want to approach it with potentially existing solutions that we have in place? And then there's the organization. How do we get people aligned with the vision that the company has in the purchase of a specific piece of software? In your opinion, is this something that needs to be kind of led top down? Are we looking at, should we be looking at the executive suite, the C-level, to be leading these processes?
When it comes to strategy, I would argue that, and I've had a recent bit of a debate with one of my kind of marketing ops heroes, Jarrell Alfonso, because I, you know, I rarely disagree with anything he puts out, but he was like talking about all this, you know, marketing ops strategy, and then you have sales strategy, and so, and my point is that we are not talking about a marketing strategy, a sales strategy, or any other department strategy. There should, in my view, there should be only one strategy. That's the business strategy, right? And this strategy should tell the whole business how to accomplish the set business goals. Marketing and marketing ops are responsible for executing on the business strategy in a way that fully supports and drives the business goals, rather than setting up their own marketing strategy. Because the problem there is, as soon as you have this top business strategy, and then you're starting to, okay, so that's the strategy, and then in our department we have this strategy, and suddenly, you know, over time they won't be aligned.
Yeah.
Well, there's a big risk that they will kind of go their separate ways. And it's kind of like this game that we played when we were young. I'm not sure what it's called in English, but directly translated to English, we had like this game called the Whispering Game.
You have to say it in Norwegian now. You know that, right?
Huh?
What is it called in Norwegian?
Viskeleken.
Viskeleken. Okay. Yeah. The Whisper Game.
Yeah, the Whisper Game. So you had when there was a lot of people, you know, together, either you stood in line or, you know, then
yeah, I remember that.
The end of the line or at the start of the line came up with this sentence or statement or something like that. And then you had to whisper in the air of the next one, right? Yeah. But not, you had to make sure that the third one didn't hear what you whispered. And then the second person would whisper this to the third person and to the fourth and the fifth. And the game was actually how well, you know, what did we put in? What did the last one get
out?
That's
a classic example, by the way.
Yeah. And I feel like if you have this business strategy and then you start doing the departmental strategies, and your like marketing ops has a strategy, and the goals for the marketing ops team is set to deliver on the marketing ops strategy rather than on the business strategy, I'm thinking, okay, so you're going to get a bit misaligned.
That's right.
So, and of course, me and Darrell, we agreed on having kind of different views on what strategy actually is. But in my view, if we're talking about a strategy, and we are, it should be led top down.
Yeah.
Because it should be a business strategy. And as for the execution on the business strategy, that I think is a cross departmental situation and
should
not
say,
be led top down.
No, I was just about to say, because the idea, the vision, and the goals that you're trying to achieve, they need to be centralized and preferably pushed from a top down so that there is some recognition in the authority who are pushing for these changes. You know, like you said, this needs to be that business approach. But once you reach the execution level, who is actually going to do this? One of the problems that I've consistently run into, there are a few exceptions, of course, is just the lack of communication between all these different departments. And like you said, this is where that whisper game, if I say whisker, comes into play, because you'll have the marketing department who think they've properly understood the request from the top. Then you have the security, you'll have sales, you'll have a service team, and they're all probably coming up with their own translation, with their own version of what is being expected from them, from the business. So how do you, of course, we know that that cross-departmental challenge is there. Mm-hmm. What have you seen in terms of companies tackling this properly, or some mistakes that you've seen that you want to warn us?
I haven't actually seen or witnessed in person a company that has tackled this in a very good way.
The sad state of affairs.
So, you know, don't run into my, you know, check up my LinkedIn profile and look at all the companies there. In my opinion, that is a, you know, a common challenge. For most companies. So, I think you're a lucky person if you have actually witnessed it. So it's not. I'm not bashing my former employers or anything. It's just that I haven't worked anywhere that has come to, you know, that kind of epiphany that, oh, we need to work like this. There has been places where we have seen some attempts to start working more aligned. But all these attempts has failed, and I think it's because it's not. That is, I think, making sure that the departments are kind of aligned and working together across departments. That should be something coming from the top down.
Yeah,
like the CEO needs to go to his C-suite, and like you need to. It's like, you know, mom and dad coming into the room and saying, hey, kids, you need to play together, right? You need to do this together.
And we know how well kids listen to their parents.
Yeah,
right?
Well, it's funny, though, that many in the C-suite is actually big kids. Oh. You didn't hear me. You need to edit that out, I think.
Yeah, I'll mark it there.
But still,
Well, I mentioned it in the last podcast. I think egos, people can quote me on this. I think egos play a huge role in these kind of situations. And as we kind of move from strategy now into the O of organization, you know, companies do exist of silo departments. And each department has their own goals. They might not be working with a common business goal. So the KPIs that they're going to be held accountable for, well, most likely, in most cases, be specific for their department. So there is no incentive to work on that cross departmental approach. And it's always a difficult one. I think the one case that I had seen it go well, I am unable to tell you how they prepared for this. How did they know that they needed to approach this and from a cross-functional method, but it worked. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, there were still challenges. There were challenges for these people, which was a cross-functional team. We had people from various departments into a single project team, and that project team still faced challenges, but they had representatives for each of these different departments within the organization to take that challenge into their own department and try to find a way to accommodate for the overall project. And I think that's something I would like to see in a future project. I have the kind of that I'd be able to convince companies to take this kind of approach.
I think that something that often has been said in the companies that I've been working for is that what is the things that get measured gets delivered. So it's all about what KPIs the CEO or what KPIs the departments get, you know, top down. And for instance, I have witnessed that you have like two different product lines that should, in my view, have been incentivized to help the other product line, like upselling, yeah, cross-selling and stuff like that. There's no incentives or even KPIs handling this at all. So the only KPIs they have is to sell their own stuff, their own product. And of course, they're open to get leads from the other product line, but they're not as eager to help the other product line getting new extra sales.
There has to be something in it for them as well. There has to be something in it for them as well.
Yeah, but there's no tracking or KPIs or incentives to do that. Yeah. And it's like we say in Norway, we have, I'm not sure how to translate this into English, though. It's like all this, it's not like in Norway, when it comes to Christmas and you have all this, and not Santa Claus, but all this, like on every farm out in the country, you have in the barn, you have like this smaller version of the Santa Claus.
Okay, yeah.
I'm not sure what.
No,
it's like elf. we actually use the same expression. It's like Nissa. It's just but there's like we are kind of all these small people, just you know, taking our we call the
Santa Claus hats. I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Santa Claus hats. You just pull it down and we sit on our own like place and just do like this, and we don't care about the rest. Is that? Yeah, and minding our own business, kind of. And when you have several products, and the product manager for each product, kind of, you know, we're selling our stuff, and look at us, we're so good, and we managed to reach our goals. And oh, so you're struggling? Tough luck. It's, you know, So
this is where that top-down approach needs to be applied.
Yeah, of course. But when you have this top-down demand that you guys need to work together, you guys need to help each other, and then you have more of a, well, you have an incentive to actually make it happen. And then, you know, again, what is measured will be done.
Yeah.
So even though when the execution is a departmental thing, it's not a top-down led thing, still you need to start from the top, and actually the CEO needs to like care about that and make it happen.
I'm wondering if the age of the organization plays a big role. I mean, if we look at the kind of larger companies with older CEOs, and don't worry, I'm happy saying older, I'm turning 50 in about a year and a little bit.
Youngster.
Are you even older?
Even older? Thank you.
That sounds friendly.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it possible to be even older than you? Oh my God. Thank you.
Sorry. No, but anyway, I'll mark that there. I mean, is it a generational gap that if the C-level of a company has less experience with kind of this digital approach and the factors or the importance of a cross-departmental system?
It may be, but
would younger companies in that sense that are often more flat in terms of structure outperform the legacy companies?
You know, that may be. I don't have any thing to back it up. But it's easy to imagine that the age of the company and also the age of the CEO and the C-suite would kind of play into this and be a big factor in how easy it would be to,
I've experienced it with startups and scale-ups. It's a whole lot easier to get people from various departments onto a single project. But it seems
probably because you don't have the history, and maybe if you have an older company that makes money and it's kind of
stagnated,
a bit of a status quo from year to year, there's really no, like, again, incentive to do stuff differently enough.
Well, but, as we've seen with some companies, change can also have a negative effect on companies.
Yeah.
I think Nike is a good example of that.
Yeah, okay. I'm not sure what you're referring to, though.
They hired a new guy and they changed up their whole marketing strategy, apparently, and I'll need to double check this, but apparently the sales crumbled. Because they generalized their whole marketing approach instead of kind of diversifying per region and per audience group. Uh-huh. They just generalized their marketing approach, I believe, at a global scale. And it just had a huge negative impact. So even
Did it recently?
I believe somewhere in the last 5 years. I think it was after or just before or just after Corona. So somewhere in the last 5 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah, my impression of Nike was that they were kind of the masters of personalization and segmentation and stuff like that. So
I mean, it goes to show us that, we'll move into processes. I mean, this is kind of processes, there are cases where processes should be changed.
Yeah.
Especially if you're looking at more, from a startup to a scale up. I've come across projects, with startups, it's kind of the Wild West. You need tracking on the website. You need a tool to track this, or you need a tool to do that. Sure, let's see what we can find, plug it in, get the data, and then start answering some questions. But as soon as you start going up to scale up, there are a lot more responsibilities that come into play. You're generating revenue, and every change that you're going to make from that moment on can have an impact on that revenue. It could be marketing, it could be technology. Your website can go down. Your app could be failing at critical moments. So when you start looking at processes, it's I think one of the things that I've really found missing in a lot of MarTech solutions these days, if you talk about marketing operations in general, is how do you monitor those processes for efficiency?
I kind of fell out a bit. Sorry.
I'll just mark it. I mean, long live editing.
Let me check.
The way I was going with monitoring process for efficiency, there's the... Kind of want to get on top of the outcome economy. Companies, a lot of these MarTech solutions need to prove their worth. A CDP does not affect your bottom line directly. It has an indirect effect. You still need, you need to collect the data. There's the profile unification, and then you need to build your audiences and flows and send it out to your ad platforms. Nowhere along the line, it's only costing you money, but how do you prove its efficiency?
So monitoring process efficiency is, of course, crucial. There's several ways I think that you can do this effectively. First, you need to establish clear KPIs for each process. It could be things like lead conversion rates, campaign ROI, or time to market for new initiatives. Then you could implement regular reporting and dashboards, use your marketing automation platform or BI tool to create real-time visualizations of these KPIs. You can have I really like having this data on flat screens in the office. Yeah. To always keep you focused on the targets. But then you also should conduct periodical audits where you review the processes step by step, identifying bottlenecks and redundancies, and also, and quite importantly, gather feedback from your team members, and because they are actually those that actually execute these processes day to day. and they often have the best insights into what's working, what's not working, because the goal here is continuous improvement, monitor, analyze, adjust, and repeat. So, yeah.
And how would you, I mean, so again, if we look at all those dashboards, something that I've come across in the past is that, I'd like you said, hanging up those dashboards on, you know, on work floors. And I'm talking about 2012, 2013. It was one of the first time I actually saw this happen. And it was great. So we had this, I think it was a Chrome browser, and it would switch tabs, and each tab would have a different report with some KPI. So
yeah, just we did all for that.
Yeah. Just to make sure that it didn't get stale, we would, you know, we would have the tab switch between reports, and it was a great way forward. One of the companies that we were reviewing at the time to kind of automate this was, they don't exist anymore. It's called Sweet Spot Intelligence, and what they did was, it was a really fascinating way of building out these kind of reports. Like you mentioned, you want the feedback, so it was a collaboration. It was a collaborative dashboard approach. So you could plug in data from various sources, and they would have a visualization layer for that data. Of course, you know, it's met certain standards, but you could actually, they'd had a mobile app and they had a web app for this, and you could start conversations on these topics. So
yeah,
with some machine learning at the time, or predictive analytics, as they called it, they were able to kind of guess on historical data what the trends would be. And the platform would offer you the capability of saying, hey, this reporting point right here, let me add a comment, let me tag someone, and you can start this conversation with the owner of that KPI, which I found fascinating. But I haven't seen any tools like that to keep that conversation going. It's one thing to hang up a dashboard on the wall, but like you said, you need to get that feedback and really start listening to the people executing these campaigns, these marketing activities.
But, you know, I would like to add on to that, because one of the things that drove that us putting these dashboards onto the screens was that we wanted people's feedback or ideas, or actually, you know, questions. We wanted them to come back and ask questions. I see this. Why is this like looking like this? Why do we have this number? Or why is this number so high or so low and stuff? And we used it to fine tune the dashboard to actually show meaningful data for those viewing it. So yeah. I'm thinking that I think this is something a lot of people working with analytics struggle with. Like being asked to set up a dashboard showing us the important stuff. And I'm like, okay, so what do you care about? No, show us the important stuff. And yeah, but do you have any questions? I could show you everything, but you wouldn't look at it at all because it's everything. So what do you wonder? You know, what are your questions? What do you want answers for? And then you realize that they don't know what to ask for, right? So I think that in terms of getting, you know, in terms of monitoring and using dashboards and reports, you just need to get started and get it out there, you know, show it to the right people, and then you will start to get feedback and questions, and then you can add some stuff to the dashboard or add another dashboard, and, you know, and then
something's better, always better than nothing. And like,
you need to start somewhere, and then people will, as soon as they see something, they will, I'm missing the figures, or I'm missing this and that. And then you just build it out. And as always, you know, dashboards and measurements are evolving.
Yeah.
From day to day, almost. So that's why it's really nice that we have moved out of the PowerPoints.
Oh yeah, no,
into the dashboards, because the PowerPoint reports is like, never been good for anything.
You really need those internal salespeople to say, "Hey, look, we've got this new analytics tool. This is the kind of data it can collect. This is how we can visualize it." And like you said, start with the basic steps, and that'll, you know, spark interest in the people looking at these dashboards and coming up with new ideas for you to either collect new data points or visualize the data in different methods. It's always Did you ever, I think I remember that one company that I was doing some contracting work for, they hung up the display at a place where there was a lot of foot traffic from outside of the department. So of course they had the monitors on the department floor itself, but also mm-hmm. one in a kind of generic hallway, and people were just walking past and they were able to see the data relating to what that department was doing. It was quite interesting because it did spark up a lot of conversation and interest from outside to better understand what they were doing.
Yeah, that's really a really good one. And actually, you know, the dashboard I was talking about, that was not in the marketing department. It was actually over at the IT department.
Yeah.
They were just close by, but they had a screen. And I'm like, okay, so you have dashboards on the various, you know, performance of servers and stuff. And could I have like a slide or two here?
Well, you put it on the one in the IT department.
Yeah.
Nice.
So just for testing purposes, right? But it, you know, it turned out that it was really, really useful because then, you know, when the CEO shows up at your desk one day asking about the numbers he saw at
the IT
dashboard over at the IT, it was like, yeah, okay, so now we're talking. Now it's working.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's a great example of that cross departmental. I think you and very subtly done, by the way. But yeah. I also notice it when I usually do implementations, is that it's great that you can hand over these instructions, the implementation documentation to front-end developers, back-end developers, et cetera. But it also helps a lot if you can just show what the results are of their work. So once they do finish off these implementations, once the data does start coming in, I've frequently, when I've had the opportunity, just set up a meeting with people, data engineers, and anyone who is not necessarily directly involved with the solution itself, in my case, the CDP, just sit down with them, say, hey, your work has led to this. Show them the real-time or your the debugging feed of the data coming in. Show what you can do with that information within the solution. Build out audiences and then sync them to platforms and give them a clear understanding of what it's leading to deliver for the company. And it really, with one or two, I mean, there's always a few that, again, you spark that next level of interest and they'll come up to you and say, hey, that's cool. How can I learn a little bit more about what I can do to further improve this? That's always great to see. It doesn't happen a lot, though. But I mean, yeah.
You need to have the time to, you know, step out of your daily chores, I think, to sit down and talk with, you know, others.
Yeah.
So it's maybe that's why you don't see that a lot, but I do agree. I have had some similar experiences, and it's really fun to see when others understand the effect of what they're doing. And I think most of the time when I have had these sit downs or this or had coworkers having sort of an epiphany, it has been related to tracking issues. Like I have to go to them actually to say, you know, when you're doing this change in the website or this change in the app you're producing or, you know, developing and stuff like that, and you just do these changes, that screws up everything behind this in these reports, right? So and also, you know, talking to other you know, people are responsible for other systems that, like, last few 5 years, we were starting to get data from other business systems in our company, and also when they just, you know, change the label of a field or anything, you know, and suddenly our reports broke. You have to go and...
All too common.
Actually, you know, all too common, I know. But having people to realize that, okay, so, you know, what you're doing is not kind of isolated here. It syncs to all these other places. And then if you change it here, you need to make other people aware of the changes you've done.
One of the first steps to that cross-departmental approach. And Oh, it's one of the first steps to that cross-departmental approach. You need yeah. to make people aware yeah. of this interconnected system they're now working in.
Yeah. And I just realized or came to my mind here that in terms of how to do the cross-departmental, you know, collaboration, I have I don't have any success stories coming out of let's make a cross-departmental project or like let's have a weekly or bi-weekly meetings where we will discuss stuff and it's, you know, but actually when I set up this Teams group, mm-hmm. like an open chat about implementing stuff, changing stuff, like this is a topic. And you have IT people there, developers there, marketing there.
They all joined voluntarily? They all joined voluntarily?
Added them. So
okay. Little side note,
like,
there.
You're now welcome into this group and you know, and people, okay, yeah. So it's another Teams chat, right?
Yeah.
But it turned out to be a Teams chat for discovery, and I would say for some clear epiphanies that like, oh, you use that field for that in your system. Okay, so we need to, you know, make sure that this and that does this, and yeah, well, I don't have any exact examples, but it was really fun to see that even though I didn't participate in a certain discussion, kind of I saw the result that I wanted with having the joint chat.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you have real problems and you get real results out of it instead of just having these, to be frank, the dull meetings where
yeah.
You just chat and there's no end results. Let's just chat next meeting and continue chatting and nobody's solving anything. Yeah, just have this kind of defined chat where people can join and, you know, answer when they have time.
Yeah.
And I think that's better in terms of solving issues and stuff like that. You know, we used it when we had releases or we had different stuff that were kind of happening at a certain time, and then we were able to have all the needed departments at the same place.
Maybe this is also that kind of that generation thing. I mean, if I just compare with my kids, they're yeah. always just texting, and I'm like, just call me if you need an answer that quickly. Instead, I get like 4 or 5 messages all. Can you answer, dad, just call. And I think the same, if you take that culture now into companies, messaging. Yeah, I think you make a good point there in that having this very informal Tory environment to share your knowledge, to engage with people from other departments can definitely be beneficial. I mean,
yeah, and you can ask, you know, right out, hey, we see this problem here. Has anyone here, you know, does anyone here in this chat know of anything that happened like
yeah.
last 5 hours? Did anyone do something huge change or anything? And then like not to kind of, you know,
no,
go after this individual or department or, and then you kind of, somebody raises their hand and yeah, we changed this and that shouldn't, you know, have anything to do with what you're experiencing. And then the third guy says, but when you do that, this happens on this side. Yeah. And that is causing the error that you see.
And it leads up to two things. One is being able to solve that problem that you've detected in mm-hmm. a relatively fast way, because somebody will know someone who might have done something to break a piece of tracking or an integration. So you'll be able to solve that quite correctly. But the second thing is that you're also creating more awareness and
yeah,
experience definitely. With these people that, hey, next time, let me just double check with everyone before we make this change. Mm-hmm. Have someone from the analytics team look at the data payloads, the data model that we're trying to push through. Small steps that prevent big potential problems.
Mm-hmm.
Just wanted to talk about Chiang Kai-feng's book, where he is, as we talk about generations, these generation gaps within organizations, and when we look at people, he's actually saying that HR needs to play a bigger role when hiring people and making sure that the people that are hired are given the opportunities to become more embedded, more knowledgeable of how the business is done in general, but also of the various knowledge and skills available in each various department.
Well, I haven't read the book, but as you present it, I couldn't agree more with Chiang Kai-feng's perspective. Yeah, okay. I got the name right. I think it comes down to integrating MarTech. We're talking about MarTech. So integrating MarTech into like the DNA of your organization, like from day one. Or, well, if you're thinking about it today, it's like from today. So, and I think this means that HR needs to work closely with marketing ops to ensure that MarTech isn't treated as an afterthought, but like a core competency. Sorry,
I was actually thinking of,
you know, if you're watching this, you might get that English is not my native language.
I was actually thinking of naming the podcast The Afterthought instead of Couch Confidentials. Would be good.
Maybe I'll take The Afterthought then.
But here's the challenge for you then, and this was a question that somebody asked me the other day. MarTech, I don't feel well coming out for this, but they say MarTech might be a wrong name because it's focused on marketing, but it's the technology that can serve both customer service, can focus on sales, it can focus on development operations. So maybe the Mar in MarTech is something that needs to be reconsidered. And you being in marketing operations, my question is, how do you feel about that? I'm against it because then I would need to change my brand name again. So I'm not doing it, but I'm curious to hear about what your thought is.
You know, like you have sales tech and you have ad tech and you have MarTech and a lot of tech, right? So when it comes to changing the name of MarTech, I'm like, why? Because it's marketing technology. It's actually describing the technology that marketing are using today, right? And it's like over 14,000 tools.
Yeah.
If you go to martechmap.com. I think it's, all these short names like MarTech, AdTech, SalesTech, it's for many people, it's difficult to know how to, deal with the name, and it's just like acronyms, but I see that someone you also know, Frans Riemersma, has written a book on customer technology.
Yeah. And I have that book. That was a great description, but.
Yeah. Trying to kind of coin or rephrase MarTech as customer technology. And though he isn't wrong, for me it may be just a different viewpoint. Like, what are we talking about? Okay, so if you talk from the customer point of view, every tech that serves the customer, or like the point of the tech is to make a better customer experience, then you can well call it customer tech, but it's not tech used by the customer, right? It's tech for
to support the customer,
customer journey and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm pretty happy with the term MarTech.
Thank you. And this saves me buying another domain name.
Well, no, I think it serves its purpose, and I don't see any point or need to change that in the. Well, a foreseeable future. I may stand corrected one day. We'll see.
We'll see in a few years.
Yeah.
Thank you a lot for joining me today. It was great talking to you and picking your brain once again. And I look forward to having more of these discussions, maybe not necessarily in a podcast format, as our paths move forward to this world of marketing technology.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. It was a real pleasure, as I was supposed to see as always, but this time too. But looking forward to the next one.
See you next time.
Thank you. Bye.